This is episode 91 with head coach at the Information Lab, Andy Kriebel.
Welcome to the Super Data Science Podcast. My name is Kirill Eremenko, data science coach and lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you inspiring people and ideas to help you build your successful career in data science. Thanks for being here today, and now let's make the complex simple.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Super Data Science Podcast. Super excited about today's episode. We've got the legendary Andy Kriebel on the show. You may have heard of Andy from his blog, VizWiz.com, where he talks about Tableau visualizations and dashboards. He's also got a blog called Data Viz Done Right, so you may have heard of him from there. He's got a Twitter where he shares amazing and stunning visualizations and other analytics tips and hacks. And finally, Andy is, of course, the head coach at the Data School, which is part of the Information Lab. So in today's session, we're going to find out all about Andy's journey, why and how he got to where he is, how he gives back to the community, what he's passionate about, and lots of tips on how you can structure your career and how you can progress through this field of data science. Personally, I really enjoyed this episode. Andy's got some amazing stories to tell, some amazing stories to share. And at some point, I even caught myself that I was like just imagining what he was explaining about his journey through Coca-Cola, through Facebook, and now through an Information Lab. I was kind of like, it was as if I was watching a movie. So sit back and relax and prepare for a very inspiring adventure. And without further ado, I bring to you Andy Kriebel. Welcome everybody to the Super Data Science Podcast. I've got a very exciting and inspiring guest today on the show, Andy Kriebel. Andy, how are you today?
I am absolutely fantastic. How are you?
Beautiful. I'm beautiful as well. I was going to make a joke about it being rainy in London, but as you said, it's sunny today, surprisingly. You know,
Very rare.
Yeah, one of those 5 days this year that is going to be sunny.
So that's 3 days in a row, too. Yeah. It's even more rare.
Oh, wow. That's crazy, man. It's like, it's like one of those movies where tomorrow you're going to wake up and you'll realize it was all a dream the past 3 days. You know,
it's like, I think so.
So
yeah.
Improbable. Okay, so you're obviously not from London, though. Like, where are you originally from?
So I was actually born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Mm. I was there and through high school, and then I went to college in Florida at Eckerd College. It's a small school on the Gulf Coast in near Tampa, Florida. It's actually in St. Petersburg, and I studied mathematics there.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then kind of moved around a bit. Lived in Atlanta for a long time, and then California before moving to London.
Okay, and you have 4 children, right?
I do. Yes.
That's so many.
They keep us busy.
That's so cool. So how are they taking the move?
Pretty good, I guess. The schools are quite different, and they're the only Americans at their school, so they tend to get picked on a lot, mostly because of Trump getting elected. But, you know, hopefully that situation resolves itself soon enough.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. All right. So, Andy, you are a really inspirational guy. You have the website vizwiz.com, and you work at the Data School, so you're head coach at the Information Labs and Data School. Tell us a bit more like about all these things that you're doing. So like maybe I've missed something there.
Well, I guess, you know, so we moved to London about 2.5 years ago. My wife came to I was working for Facebook in California before this, running kind of their Tableau practice and data visualization there. And I would travel the world a lot and do training and things like that. And my wife came to a conference with me in London, and it was her first time. And on the way home, she said, let's move to London, and which was really kind of caught me off guard a bit, because she didn't really want to move to California because her family was all from Atlanta and, you know, moving away from family and stuff. But maybe that was a good intermediate step. So I actually just started reaching out to my network and spoke with Craig Bloodworth, who I've known for a long time. I've known Craig and Tom Brown, who's the founder of the Information Lab, since about 2010. And Craig and I started chatting and we're like, hey, why don't you just come work for us? And we're like, okay, well, that was an easy interview. so from Fantastic. That point, it was a matter of kind of talking about what I would do for them. At the time, Tom was hearing from a lot of customers that they wanted long-term consultants, and that's not really the way that our core consulting team is set up. Mm-hmm. They're set up for short-term engagements, but we were seeing a greater and greater need for analytics talent and people for long-term consulting engagements. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where the idea for the Data School came about. Basically, the way the Data School works is we hire 8 people every 3 times a year, so every 4 months, and they go through a 2-year training program. Mm-hmm. And the first 4 months are training with me at the Data School. Mm-hmm. And my job is basically to make them as good of a data analyst as I can in 4 months.
Nice.
And people may scoff at that and say, you know, how can you teach somebody in 4 months? And I say, talk to any of them and I dare you to say they're not a great data analyst when they leave.
Yeah. And we actually had one of them on the podcast. Rachel Pong was on the podcast like just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And she was in DS5. So mm-hmm. DS6 is in, we call it DS Data. It's kind of just our short term because it's too hard to say Data School all the time. Mm-hmm. But she was in the 5th cohort and the 6th is in training right now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Rachel's great. And I think one of the really fun things for me is actually the hiring process. Mm-hmm. It's actually very unique. I don't know anybody else in the world that does it the way we do. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really fun. So
Tell us more.
Basically, we don't ask for CVs or resumes. I think those are actually probably the worst way to identify talent. And that's the way recruiters do it. Mm-hmm. The problem that I see with recruiters is recruiters generally don't know what it takes to do the job. They are good at LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. They're good at talking to people, but they really can't identify talent. Mm-hmm. So why bother with recruiters? Mm-hmm. And on top of that, really what we're hiring, we're going to teach them how to be a data analyst. So how do we then take that part of the equation out and identify just people that are passionate about data analytics? Mm. That's essentially what we're hiring for.
Passion.
We're hiring for passion, right? You can't, that's something you can't teach. Mm-hmm. You can't teach somebody to be passionate about data analysis. They either have it or they don't.
And it's very hard to see from a resume.
It's impossible to see from a resume. And people lie on them anyway.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So basically what they have to do is they have to create something in Tableau. Mm-hmm. You know, they publish it up to Tableau Public, send mm-hmm. us a link to it, and that's their application. Mm-hmm.
That's so
and
cool.
What's really interesting about it is it's a great filter because think about all the resumes or CVs we would get for this kind of role if that's what we asked for. Mm. So it's an incredible immediate filter because anybody that takes the time, most people that apply have never used Tableau before. Mm-hmm. I would say, 80 to 90% have never even seen Tableau before. Uh-huh. So if they have to go learn a tool to create an application and they're still interested in it afterwards, You've already identified people that have that passion you're looking for. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really fun. So and it's also great just to kind of see them develop. And another neat thing that it does also is that if a recruiter that's looking for a data analyst is going to look for very specific educational backgrounds and past experience in data analysis and things like that. And we don't look for that mm-hmm. because just because you worked in data science or data analysis or have a math degree, it doesn't mean you're going to be a good data analyst. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, let's say you're a journalist or you have a degree in English or something like that. That doesn't mean you can't be a data analyst. Mm-hmm. We're looking for people that have passion and we're going to teach them how to be an analytical thinker.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. And so you said 8 people per cohort is how many you hire.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so right now you've got DS6 going, so DS5 has finished, 5 times 8, 40.
They finished their training, right?
Yeah. So mm-hmm. out of 40 people that have gone through, what is your success rate? What would you say you've got, that you've identified the talent correctly and these people are indeed passionate and they've learned and what you've taught them is going to help them in their careers?
Yeah, that's a really tough question. Mm. So the curriculum's actually changed quite a bit since we started. I would say that everybody that's made it through the training program mm-hmm. is successful. Mm-hmm. They're all successful in their own ways, and they come out with different strengths and weaknesses. Mm-hmm. A lot of the way that we work a lot on the things that they're not good at, mm-hmm. you know, so trying to make sure they're very, very well-rounded.
Yep.
But they come out with different sets of skills. So, for example, Rachel, who was on your podcast before, is great at like storytelling and communicating with an audience. Mm-hmm. Other people are great at, you know, maybe doing some predictive analytics, or, you know, are particularly great at design or things like that. So what's really fun over the course of the 4 months is to kind of see how people develop in these different areas and sort of find their own niche as well. So they all get kind of the broad experience of, you know, both the technical and the non-technical skills, the soft skills they need to learn.
Yep.
But they all kind of find something they're particularly passionate about.
Mm, that's really cool. Yeah, and then they can build their own careers in that direction.
Exactly, right. Yeah, and one of the things that we stress a lot is kind of building their own brand while they're in the data school as well. I'm a big proponent of people building their own brand because nobody else is going to build it for them.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the things that they're required to do is a lot of blogging, mm-hmm. creating lots of visualizations on Tableau Public. Mm-hmm. We record most of their presentations. As long as it's not for a presentation for a client, we'll record it and put it up on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're kind of building this portfolio along the way that kind of becomes their CV. Mm-hmm. So it's better to actually have practical things that you've done, mm-hmm. and you can point people to, look, here's my 50 visualizations up on Tableau Public, mm-hmm. and here's the 70 blog posts I've written, or 20 blog posts, whatever it may be, mm-hmm. and here's a series of recordings of presentations that I've given. Mm-hmm. You know, they are required to present every week. So every kind of the way the curriculum is structured is every week is a different project. Mm-hmm. Some of those, about half of those, we do for clients for free, so they get, you know, practical experience, mm-hmm. like kind of trying to solve real problems for customers.
Yep.
And then the other half are weeks that I make up the projects. Mm-hmm. So some of the weeks are harder than others. And it's all about basically kind of trying to develop that really well-rounded kind of holistic experience. Mm-hmm. But at the end of each week, every Friday at 3:00, they have to present. Sometimes they're presenting directly to a client in the room, and other times we're just presenting to each other. We tend to have a lot of people come in on Fridays to visit us, mm-hmm. so there's always people sitting in the back of the room, so you kind of never know who the audience is. So that's kind of a unique experience as well.
That's really cool. So
they become really, really good presenters, you know, when they have to do it, you know, 20 to 30 times over the course of 4 months. You can't help but become a good presenter.
Yeah, yeah. And Rachel mentioned that to us. She said that, you know, like, it's a great way that you guys have developed for people learning these skills to get into this mode of presenting, that they're kind of like, if they feel in a safe environment, because they're still at the school, but the clients come to them, and, you know, the client comes, you know, talks about the, delivers the challenge that, you know, that they need to solve, and then they have to present it, like, by the end of the week, or in a few weeks or something like that. And that's really powerful, because it gets you, as you say, presenting already in that experience, but at the same time, it's like the first step towards that. It's not as scary as going to the client's office and being in an unknown environment. You're kind of like presenting in the same place.
Yeah.
And also, it's really cool that is it correct that the team is time pressured? Like, when they get the challenge, how much time do they have to solve it and then come up with the presentation for the client?
Right. So for a client project, the client comes in on a Monday.
Yeah.
On a Monday morning, and kind of gives a brief about the project, introduces them to the data. Mm-hmm. And that's really where the team's learning how to be a good business analyst, mm-hmm. you know, how to ask the right questions, the whole purpose of that kind of project kickoff meeting is to really understand exactly what the client is looking for. Mm-hmm. And that's really hard for them to do at the beginning.
Yeah.
And part of it is I intentionally let them do it themselves, because I want them to kind of learn from their mistakes as well. I could do the business analysis and kind of ask the questions for them, but then they don't learn. Mm-hmm. So a lot of their successes are actually built upon their failures, or they realize, okay, these are the things we didn't ask, right? Those mm-hmm. sorts of things. So, and then for the client projects, they rotate who the project lead is. Mm-hmm. So let's say there's 8 people in the data school and there's 8 client projects. Each person will be the project lead for one of those client projects. So they get a bit of project management experience. You know, we follow the Scrum development methodology. So mm-hmm. You know, we do a daily stand-up. We actually introduced something new where the project lead has to tell a really corny joke to start the day,
nice.
Which is really, really interesting. Some of them are like horrendously bad, but that's okay. But
breaks, you know, breaks it gives ice. Them,
yeah, and they're the primary interface with the client. You know, I'm not. Mm-hmm. So basically, they run the project for the week. Now, during that week, they also have training. So about, you know, they only probably get about 15 to 20 hours to actually work on the project.
Mm.
So they're very, very time crunched for these really complicated questions that the client brings to them. And then, you know, kind of usually in the middle of the week, they'll do a check-in with the client and kind of show them kind of where they're, what they've progressed on and make sure that they're actually, you know, approaching the questions the right way and that sort of thing. And then Friday, the client comes in, we've got a beer fridge, try to make it a kind of comfortable environment for both the client and for us, and they present back. And then we turn it all over to the customer. It's their work for free.
Okay, that's so cool. That's a really cool setup. And then after several months like that, so 4 months, then they go and work on the clients. You attach them to clients for some time periods.
Yes. Yeah, so they do 3 6-month consulting engagements for us.
Mm-hmm.
The idea there is to give them a pretty rounded experience.
Mm-hmm.
They hopefully work in 3 very different industries and 3 very different types of clients.
Mm-hmm.
The idea being, you know, I try to stress to them all that think of those as 3 6-month interviews.
Mm-hmm.
It's their chance to go in and really impress the client and mm-hmm. hopefully get a job offer
okay.
at the end. So ideally, they get 3 job offers from their clients mm-hmm. at the end of the 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
We will make offers to 1 to 2 people per class,
mm-hmm.
Potentially. Probably, you know, it'd be pretty rare to do more than 2.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they need to look at it as, you know, these are chances for me to really impress.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of stress to them, I'm like, you know, if you finish your 6-month placement and the client's perfectly okay with you leaving, or they don't ask us to keep you for another 6 months, I would probably feel like you didn't do something right.
Mm.
Maybe you didn't fulfill all of the potential you could have at the client, you know, and it's also a way for them to interview the client for 6 months, right? So on the flip side, they need to know if it's an environment they like working in. Do they like the challenges? Do they like the people they work with? Do they like the corporate environment? You know, those sorts of things. So the idea is at the end of 2 years, we kind of help them find a job. We kind of become I don't want to use the word recruiters, but we help place them. We don't really become recruiters. We become placers, I guess.
Yep.
I don't know what the word is because we're not really recruiting them. We're placing them.
Yeah, agency kind of thing.
Yeah, agents. Maybe that's a good way to say it.
Mm.
So, you know, I'm very involved with them when they're trying to make their decisions on what they want to do if they don't get an offer to stay with the information lab.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, they all approach me and want to talk to me about what their options are and things like that. And I just kind of, you know, I kind of become their coach again.
Mm-hmm.
And I help coach them through their career decisions.
That's so cool. And if some of them go to the information lab, do they then go on to those short-term consulting projects or
right.
not? They
exactly.
do them all. Okay.
Yeah. Short-term yeah.
Interesting. So interesting. Okay. So they work at the data science lab. So, and do you get any like feedback, like from that transitional period from being at the data science lab for 4 months,
yeah,
a data school, which is part of information lab, they being there for 4 months and then they move on to their first client. Do you get any feedback on that transition? Do they feel like cultural shock or like a corporate shock?
So we have a couple of people that part of their job, they're on the core consulting team, but part of their job is to check in with the data schoolers while they're on their placements
mm-hmm.
and just kind of see how it's going and, you know, maybe discover any issues they're not bringing up or things like that. Generally, you know, and then if I need to get involved, they'll let me know, or if, you know, I need to go, you know, meet them for a coffee and talk to them or whatever it might be. But we use a tool called Convo, which
mm-hmm.
is, you know, like it's kind of like a combination of Slack and Facebook for work.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing collaboration tool.
Mm-hmm.
And because our company's primarily remote, everybody's remote.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great way for people to post their issues and
mm-hmm.
talk about what they're working on and ask for help and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're pretty, you know, we stay in touch with them pretty often.
Mm-hmm.
So while they're on their placements, they have lots of avenues that they can ask for support.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times the hard thing is for them to learn that it's okay to ask for support.
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as a dumb question.
Mm-hmm.
But in between their placements, they have a week back at the data school. and we kind of put them through, you know, they'll all present about what they did at their client, you know, and we come up with a list of things that they want refreshers on or things like that. So there's a period in between their placements where they come back and we kind of run, you know, a couple day workshop for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for the overview. I'm sure this has gotten a lot of people excited about the Data School and the Information Lab. And in parallel to all of this, you also run vizwiz.com. So tell us about that. Why did you start the website and what's all about?
Oh, wow. It's been going a long time. Over, I don't even know how long I've been doing it now. I actually, Andy Cochrane from Tableau credited me with creating the first ever Tableau blog, which think is pretty cool.
That's awesome.
So I actually started it really as a way to remember how I was doing things. As a way to kind of document my learning along the way and things like that. So when I look back at kind of my first few blog posts, I'm like, oh my gosh, that was terrible. But I actually think it's great because it shows a progression as well. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I try to encourage the people that work with me is, you know, don't ever delete anything from your profile because it shows a progression. Mm-hmm. But so I started it primarily as a way to document what I was learning along the way and to kind of share with the Tableau community. I think the Tableau community is very, very unique in software in the way that they freely give to each other. And I hope that I'm a part of, I'm a good example for people for that to, you know, kind of give freely and don't expect anything in return. I think that's the biggest thing is, you know, it's very important for people to share and not necessarily expect it to be reciprocated. That's not why you should be sharing in the first place.
Yeah.
So I write a lot, usually, you know, at least 3 days a week, sometimes every day. It kind of depends on you know, I'm very regimented with my time, so that helps. But basically, on Mondays, I run a project called Makeover Monday with Eva Murray, who works at Exasol. Mm-hmm. This is the second year of the project. Last year, I did it with Andy Cotgrave. But this year, it's actually really, really kicked on. Mm-hmm. So that's basically the way that project works is every Sunday, we post a data set, even though it's called Makeover Monday. A lot of people do it on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So we post a link to an article and to a data visualization and to a data set and say, here's the original. How can you make it better? Some of those charts are really good. Some of them, most of them are bad. Mm-hmm. And the idea is, you know, how can you tell a better data story? And it's really fun because you get 52 different data sets to work with throughout the year that aren't things that you do at work. Mm-hmm. So it's really fun. So a lot of companies actually have taken it on now. So, you know, they'll run their own Makeover Monday sessions where they, you know, they just give their people time to be creative. Mm-hmm. So that's Mondays. Tuesdays, I try every week to record a video with some kind of Tableau tip. I call it Tableau Tip Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And so those I just do, you know, I used to write out all of the steps that I would go through, but that took a really long time. So I think maybe 2 years ago now, I started doing YouTube videos mm-hmm. instead. And it's much easier for me and it's much faster because mm-hmm. I can just, you know, just record it once. I make lots of mistakes. So I've actually gotten feedback from people that they like that I don't heavily edit my videos because it shows how I mess up and you know, things like that. And they actually pick up things that I don't realize they pick up on.
Yeah.
So so I try to do those every Tuesday. And then this year on Wednesdays, I started a project with Emma White, who runs the Center of Excellence at the Information Lab. We do a project called Workout Wednesday. Mm-hmm. It started last year. Last year, we called it the Data School Gym mm-hmm. because they were basically challenges that the data schoolers would give to each other. Mm-hmm. And then we decided, well, why don't we just kind of open that up to the community? So it's actually – so I would say Makeover Monday is for kind of any audience where Workout Wednesday, it's Tableau specific. Mm-hmm. And it's for people that are really looking to kind of move on to that next level. Mm-hmm. So it's not really for beginners. It's for people that want challenges. Mm-hmm. So these are typically very difficult. They take you hours to do. Mm-hmm. But it's all about kind of developing and learning. And then Thursdays, I have another website that's called datavizdoneright.com mm-hmm. where I kind of highlight, I follow lots of blogs on Feedly, using Feedly. Mm-hmm. On Thursdays, I highlight, you know, something that I think is a great example of data visualization. And I write about, you know, it's really simple. It's just a picture. And then it's what works and what could they improve. and which is kind of the same format that I use for Makeover Monday. But it's a way for me to kind of have I essentially created it for myself as a way to kind of have a place where I could go back and see visualizations that I really liked and maybe get some inspiration.
That's fantastic. I'm actually looking at your Makeover Monday, the one of the most recent ones, how it has access to toilets changed for girls in India.
Yeah,
I can see. So there's an initial visualization, which wasn't very telling, which was kind of hard to read. And then you changed it into like a Tableau interactive.
Yeah, I made a slow graph on that one. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. No, it makes total sense. That's so cool. It sounds like you're very busy. How do you combine that with four children?
I'm very good with my time. I'm also training for a marathon at the moment too. So
what does that mean? You mentioned you're regimented on time. Like, can you give us some tips?
Sure. Yeah. So I typically wake up between 5:30 and 6. Mm-hmm. I then, on my running days, I get up and I take the train about halfway in, and then I run the rest of the way, or sometimes I run all the way from home. It kind of depends on what my training is for the day. Mm-hmm. So that's so I train for marathons Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday. Mm-hmm. And then I recently bought a bike, so now I'm biking to work on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Mm-hmm. which ironically saves me 30 minutes a day each way.
Wow.
You'd think it wouldn't, but it does.
London, yeah,
pretty much, yeah. So, I do all that stuff, and I'm usually done by 7:30 in the morning. So I'm done before most people are even awake with my exercise. And doing that early on the weekends doesn't interrupt my family time either. And then I do most of my blogging, kind of between 8 and 9 in the morning, and then the day to school starts at 9. Mm-hmm. So I do that through the day, and then at night I kind of head back home, and that's my family time.
Oh, fantastic. So you get all of those extracurricular activities out of the way before you even start work.
Pretty much. Yeah. Most of the time. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. All right. And in addition to all of that, of course you're a Tableau Zen master. Can you tell our listeners what a Tableau Zen master is?
Oh, well, I think that's part of the mystery, is it's kind of undefined. There's no like checklist for somebody to become a Zen master. So you won't find a list anywhere that says Microsoft has their MVP MVP program. Well, that's a checklist you can follow and you get it automatically. It's actually like, I would think it's a designation, I think is the best way to describe it. Mm-hmm. It's people that are experts at Tableau that freely give back to the community. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of, I like to think of it as kind of a select group of people that go above and beyond what anybody else does in the community. Again, a lot of it's undefined, and that's intentional. Mm-hmm. So every year I always wonder if I'm going to get it again. So I try to do more. Like next year, I'll try to do more than I did this year so that I can continue to show my value to the community. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I see it. It's really, really neat. Tableau does things for us throughout the year. They give us kind of special access at the conference. They have special areas set up, designated for us, where people can come meet us and things like that. So that part's, it's kind of fun, but it's a bit weird as well, because it can be kind of like a celebrity thing, which is really weird for a piece of software that you just like using to play with data. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of cool too, because then you get to meet people that are leaving comments on your blog and things like that. So it's really fun for me to put a face to the names and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And speaking of Tableau, are you happy with the way the software has been developing? They've introduced lots of new features and it's very exciting. So do you see a bright future for Tableau in the coming years?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, if I didn't, I wouldn't use it. Mm. I think imitation is imitation's the sincerest form of flattery. Mm-hmm. Every other data visualization project is trying to copy what Tableau does, which means Tableau is doing something right.
Yeah.
And what those companies don't realize is they build it in a way that isn't nearly as user friendly as what Tableau does. Mm-hmm. And they're in a constant game of catch up, right? Because mm-hmm. Tableau is innovating so quickly that how can somebody ever keep up with the innovations that Tableau is doing? Mm-hmm. So, it's, for me, it's Tableau is fun. Mm-hmm. It makes data analysis fun. Mm-hmm. And I never thought I would say something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And so before the Information Lab, you were at Facebook. Tell us a bit about your time there. You were already working on data visualization. How did that all go?
Yeah, so maybe I should step back before that.
Yeah, sure.
So I worked at Coca-Cola before Facebook, and I was worked in revenue management. And one day we happened to, or the director of our group, we were in kind of the annual planning process, and kind of the way that works is you sort of set budgets for the sales team, and then they have to plan to those budgets. And basically, we were using Microsoft Cubes in Excel. And which was fine. Cubes are great if you know the answer to every question you'll ever ask. But we couldn't really create dashboards. And we wanted dashboards so people could know kind of how they were tracking toward their goals. Like you know, they had their goals and they had these plans they were creating. So how'd the plans compare to the goals sort of thing? Very, very simple, right? In theory, it's very simple. And we didn't have dashboard software. So I just happened to Google, you know, dashboard software. And Tableau was the first thing that came up. And I, you know, I read the kind of, you know, the little Google description that comes up or whatever, you know, when you search. And I was like, oh, well, that sounds kind of like what I'm looking for. So I go to the website and I download it. I watch a couple videos and I had the entire project done in 30 minutes. And at that point, I was absolutely hooked. So that actually, so, you know, Coca-Cola went through a reorg because they do that every 18 months. And my boss actually encouraged me to move into a different role where I could get to do this kind of work more. So she knew that I loved doing data analysis and I love presenting and I loved using Tableau. So she helped me get into a role where I was doing price promotion optimization, which is a mouthful, but basically what that means is how effective are promotions. So I worked with the sales teams for CVS and Walgreens and Rite Aid, who are three you know, massive you know, drugstore chains, and they're also kind of like convenience stores as well. Huge Tableau, or not huge, huge Coca-Cola customers. And basically, I got to work with the sales teams and go on sales calls and present like, you know, promotional analysis as I was doing for them. So it would be things like, okay, when let's say it's a 12-pack promotion, and if you're a 12-pack of cans, and they might sell 3 for $9 versus 4 for $12. Well, the price point for those is the same, but consumers behave very differently to those. And what was really fun was when, so all of those places have kind of like shopper cards or loyalty cards. When you would start looking at the loyalty card information and, you know, what are people buying when they buy Coca-Cola versus when they buy Pepsi? And how much is the value of the rest of that basket? So there's, you know, that's a pretty common term in CPG for consumer product companies is the rest of the basket. So basically, you know, which one drives people to buy more stuff in the basket, Coke or Pepsi? Well, no surprise, it's Coca-Cola. So it was really fun because then I would get to go take this analysis and sit directly with customers and let them ask me questions along the way. You know, we give a presentation all done in Tableau, the presentation, no PowerPoint. And one of the things that really blew them away was that I could answer their questions without saying, oh, let me come back to you in 3 weeks. And help them really drive their business and be kind of an unbiased, you know, holistic advisor. So we would tell them, these are the weeks you should run Pepsi. These are the weeks you should run Coke. These are the promotions you should be running. And then to see kind of their business take off was really, really gratifying. And so I presented that case study, you know, with the kind of promotion analysis work I was doing at the Tableau conference in 2011. And then I got a phone call shortly after from Facebook. Actually, I used to have kind of like a chat widget on my blog that kind of broke. But, you know, and I used to get messages from people all the time, just asking questions or emails, asking for help and things like that. Well, I got one from this guy named Namit Raisarana at Facebook. And it was just like, hey, Andy, we're, you know, we're looking to implement Tableau. We just have some questions for you. And I was like, okay, you know, when do you want to chat? And he's like, well, can we talk this afternoon? Well, so I get on the phone, there's three or four other people on the phone. And about halfway through, I realized it was actually an interview, which is probably the best way to be interviewed, right? To not know you're being interviewed. And then they made me an offer to move to California and kind of run things, run the Tableau and data visualization practice at Facebook. And that was a really, really incredible experience. A lot of fun. So, yeah, so I did that for a couple of years. And then you know, I kind of went through the story of how we ended at the Information Lab earlier.
That's so cool. That's such a – I just, like, quote myself that I was listening to a story as if I was watching a movie. That is like so interesting. The experiences.
Yeah, I mean,
you
it's you know, and it, and it's a really, you know, and I kind of pitch myself. It's like, if I had never done that first Google search, what would my life be like now?
Yeah.
You know, I know I wouldn't be as satisfied as a person.
Yeah.
So, you know, I owe a lot to Tableau for that.
Mm. Yeah, and it's kind of like you know, when you're ready, you get these opportunities presented to you, and you just
right.
need to grab them by the horns and go with
yeah.
it. That's so cool. That's so cool. And I, on all of that, like, I've got an interesting question for you. Like, you're an inspiration to many. There's thousands and thousands of people who read your blogs and follow you on Twitter, and people that you've helped in the data school. Who has been an inspiration to you along your journey?
There's been a few key people, I think. So Alpa Sutaria, who was my boss at Coca-Cola before, you know, when I worked in revenue management, the encouragement she gave me to pursue my passions was massive. Mm-hmm. I read a book at the time that I believe she told me to read called 50 Days to the Work You Love, or 48, sorry, not 50, 48 Days to the Work You Love by Dan Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a bit of a religious slant to it, so I kind of ignored that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it helped me kind of identify what I was passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same, that would that I started reading that book at the same time that I started using Tableau.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that was a coincidence, but I owe a lot to her for kind of pushing me to do the work that I love to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then the boss I had after that, James, was just incredible. You know, he, you know, when I was very hesitant to, you know, I loved doing the price optimization work. It was so much fun, and going mm-hmm. and visiting customers, and it was all stuff that was all new to me, and I really enjoyed it. And then, you know, when I got the job offer from Facebook, I went to him and I told him, I said, "Hey, James, you know, I've got this offer. What should I do?" And he said, "You are an absolute idiot if you don't do this.
Whoa, that was your boss.
Yeah,
nice.
Exactly. Yeah. And then kind of from the Tableau community perspective, one person in there's tons of people to mention, but Dan Murray, who I met in Atlanta and I met at the very first Tableau conference in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
He's always been kind of a mentor to me, you mm-hmm. know, encouraging me along the way, you know, pushing me, always a sounding board. He was the first person I called when I got the offer from Facebook, and you know, he was telling me, and I'm an idiot as well if I don't do it, and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. So, you know, those three people in particular have mm-hmm. been huge influences on the early part of my career.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, here at the Information Lab, you know, Tom Brown, the owner of the company,
mm-hmm.
he's absolutely incredible. I mean, I think I get a lot of things done, and then I see what he does, and I don't know how he does it. But, you know, part of it for me is that he lets me do the work that I love to do. You know, he doesn't muddle with the curriculum of the data school.
Mm-hmm.
He just lets me do it. He trusts me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having trust from your boss is really, really gratifying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like you've been very fortunate with bosses and mentors in your life.
I've had my fair share of bad ones as well, like everybody has. But I think that helps you recognize when you have a good one, and
yeah.
that also helps. It also helps shape the way that you know that you manage people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I try to treat people the way that I want to be treated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, totally agree with that. And once you find a person that who's good for you, who might be a mentor, a boss, maybe an employee or a friend, how do you keep that relationship going, and how do you find some way to maximize the lessons that you learn from that relationship?
Oh my gosh, there's probably a book in that somewhere. You know, I think part of it is not being afraid to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when somebody offers their help to you, take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm still in contact with them. I, you know, they, you know, either they'll reach out to me or I'll reach out to them and say, "Hey, you know, how you doing?" I think it's about keeping those doors of communication open and letting them know that you're doing well and you appreciate them and that sort of thing, because, you know, it's good for them to hear that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think it can be very difficult to recognize when somebody's a good mentor for you. A lot of times you don't know until after they're no longer your mentor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think that's how you know they're a great boss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't realize they're a great boss, then that probably makes them a great boss. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but in a weird sort of way, you know, it's almost like you don't realize it till it's gone, sort of thing. You know, I look for people that encourage me and inspire me, right, in the work that they do. And that's kind of what I look to do for the people that are around me. So I try to give back to them as much as they give to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, fantastic. And like, I want to move on to a bit of a different question, but also related to your career. What has been your biggest challenge in this world of data?
Probably access to data. Mm. Companies make it way more difficult than they need to mm-hmm. to let their employees find insights in their companies. Let me give you a couple of examples on kind of polar opposites for those things. So when I was at Coca-Cola, they used Teradata for their backend storage, mm-hmm. but you're not allowed to access the data. Mm. So how are you supposed to actually do your job as a data analyst if you can't get the data? So we would have to actually kind of go through a lot of hoops. We used MicroStrategy to run kind of because that was the only thing that was allowed to connect to directly to Teradata. Mm-hmm. And we would basically run tabular reports in there that we would then export into CSVs and import into a SQL server that IT didn't know we had. And the thing is, you hear those stories all the time because people are just trying to get stuff done.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And IT is too often a roadblock. So that's how we kind of worked around it at Coca-Cola. And, you know, and what was great is, like, for example, when I started using Tableau there and we wanted to buy some licenses, IT wouldn't buy it for us because it wasn't on their official list of, you know, things that pay them back. Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of side deals done in these things. I'm mm-hmm. not ignorant. They didn't want to support it. So we just bought it on a credit card and expensed it. Mm. But, you know, when it came to renewal and the CFO is using your reports every day to kind of run the business, guess how easy it is to get approval then for yeah. that expense, right? Yeah. IT still didn't support it, but the CFO did, so it got paid for, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how we worked around it at Coca-Cola. And then actually one of the biggest concerns Facebook had about hiring me was, would I be able to handle going from a very, you know, kind of corporate culture at Coca-Cola, kind of a very tight, you know, restrictive type of environment to a very open culture at Facebook. So at Facebook, all of the employees have access to all of the data. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. Nice. You're trained in the beginning what data you are allowed to access and what data you are not. Mm-hmm. And if you access data that you're not allowed to access, you're fired. Mm-hmm. It's very, very simple. And I've been there and I've seen security people walk up and walk people out the door. Mm-hmm. That also frees up people to kind of get the data they need for the right project. Mm-hmm. So, that was very, very liberating. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of the polar opposites of, the data access part of it. So I swear every project, every data analysis project I've ever done is 90% or 80 to 90% data prep and 10 to 20% of data analysis and data yep. visualization.
Yep.
And I think that's probably pretty common. Mm-hmm. So I think, I use Alteryx now that I'm at the information lab, and I wish that I had that a long time ago. It would have made my life so much easier.
Yeah, totally agree with you. And speaking of getting data sets, like where, if you can share this, where do you get your data sets for your, you know, Makeover Monday and Tableau Tip Tuesday, Workout Wednesday, for all of these amazing projects yeah. that you do? You need a lot of data sets.
So for Makeover Monday, it's actually pretty easy. There's a lot of crappy visuals out there. A lot of people send them to us. I also get some of them from, the blogs that I follow mm-hmm. or the websites that I follow. Sometimes, for example, there might be a particularly poor visualization that I think would be a great topic or it's timely or something, but the data is just too hard to get together, then I'll just ignore that one because I want it to be as minimal data prep as I need to. Mm-hmm. But even I have a very, very extensive backlog of topics. We've probably got at least another year's worth in our backlog right now. The Tableau Tip Tuesday and Workout Wednesday, those are typically done with kind of canned data sources that everybody gets when they install Tableau. Mm-hmm. So that way they can follow along. But I do publish those as well so that, you know, if they want to, you know, use the same data set that I'm using, they can.
Yeah.
So the Tableau Tip Tuesday and Workout Wednesday, those are done with kind of standard data sets that everybody has. But Makeover Monday, it can be challenging. But I kind of time box myself on the data prep and I say, you know what, if it's going to take me more than an hour to get this data ready, I'm just going to use something else.
Mm. Yeah. No. Okay. That's a pretty good way to approach it because like I sometimes spend like days on data prep, not hours, days.
But yeah. I think Makeover Monday in particular, you know, anybody can go out there now, and this we're in week 33 of this year. So there's now 85 unique data sets out there for people to practice data analysis with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, no, that's really cool. Yeah. So guys listening to this podcast, check it out. There's like tons. Yeah. There's a whole...
Yeah. It's very similar to like data is plural and, you know, data.world, you know, they're mm-hmm. curating data sets now as well. And it's great.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. No, those are some good websites. Okay. So that was a interesting answer to that question. I'm sure a lot of people have that similar challenge. And now on the flip side, what's been a recent win that you can share with us in your role or in your career?
Oh boy, that's a good question. A recent win. Mm-hmm. Gosh, every day feels like a win.
That's good. That's a good life to live.
You know it. Yeah. It's hard because I try to live my life where if I don't learn something every day, I feel like I failed. Mm. So I'm constantly trying to learn. But you know, for me, I don't know. So every 4 months, I start with a new group of data schoolers, right? Mm-hmm. And they know very little when they start. So I get so much satisfaction out of watching them grow every day. Mm-hmm. I get little wins like that every day, mm-hmm. you know, and kind of, you know, I love helping people. Mm. And, you know, even I have started, you know, we now have our own Bright Talk channel so we can host webinars whenever we want. And maybe recently one thing that's been particularly fun is we do this thing called Makeover Monday Viz Review, mm. where people can submit things that they've created for Makeover Monday onto Twitter. We use the hashtag MM for Makeover Monday, MM Viz Review, mm-hmm. and we will review it live on the webinar. Mm-hmm. And we don't look at them ahead of time. And we just kind of give our initial impressions. And those have been really fun. And we're getting lots of really good feedback from the community on that. And so it's been great, you know, working with Eva on the project because she's got all these amazing ideas and so much energy. And you know, it's been really great to kind of have a partner in the project that really, you know, pushes you and makes you better.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And I can attest to that. Like having a partner on the project or business partner is like really good. It helps you, you know, see things from a different perspective. Sometimes you get stuck in your own mentality, and then when you speak to somebody else, you get different opinions and frees up your mind to approach things differently.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the funniest thing working with her is she'll send me a, you know, WhatsApp message or something and says, I have an idea. Hmm. And with kind of like, you know, the emoji that's like the straight face showing the teeth, you know, that's when I know I'm in for more work. but I also know it's going to be a great idea. So it's funny.
Yeah, that's really cool. No, that's amazing. And I've got a kind of a philosophical question for you here.
Oh boy. Okay.
Yeah. If you thought that what we've had so far isn't enough, then here we go. Where do you think the field of data science is going? So what should our listeners prepare for if they want to be ready for the future that's coming?
Well, first off, I think data science is a bit of an overused term because everybody is kind of a data science scientist now. Mm-hmm. Or everybody should be a data scientist now. I think the field is actually just starting. Mm. It's immature in certain way. Immature as far as, you know, kind of how long it's been around, I guess, in kind of the modern sense of data science. So there's so many people that, you know, data is everywhere around us now, right? And whether it's, you know, people that, you know, want to understand their fitness or they want to, you know, manage their diet or whatever, they can do all that kind of stuff through data, right? And kind of the Internet of Things and wearing a Fitbit or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. I think people are starting to see kind of how data science and data analysis and data visualization can impact people's lives, right? You're seeing a lot of like really good social causes people are doing now because these charities don't really have, you know, the capabilities in-house or the technical expertise. So there's plenty of chances for people to freely donate their own time and things like that. I mean, there's so much opportunity and there's so much need as well, right? The number of companies that need data scientists is far greater than the number of data scientists that are available. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the way data is exploding, it's only going to become a bigger gap, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's super encouraging to kind of see all of these, you know, all of these different avenues people can take, whether they want to learn, you know, they want to learn Tableau and Alteryx, or they want to learn D3 and R, or whatever it might be, right? It's whatever you're passionate about, pursue it, you'll find a job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Love it. Love the advice. Well, Andy, we're coming to the end. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Where can our listeners contact you, find you, follow you, so that they can see how your career develops from here, or get, you know, like some more inspiration and insights from the things that you share around?
Sure. So I'll just give you a quick rundown on some of the websites. So, well, I guess I'll start with Twitter. So on Twitter, I'm VizWizBI. Mm-hmm. VizWiz was taken and they wouldn't give it to me, even though they don't use it. So yep. I'm VizWizBI for business intelligence.
Yep.
It's the best thing I could come up with at the time. And my website is VizWiz.com. Mm-hmm. And then I also have DataVizDoneRight.com.
Mm-hmm.
And the data school is thedataschool.co.uk, and Makeover Monday is makeovermonday.co.uk.
Okay, gotcha. Are you active on LinkedIn at all?
Yeah. People can connect with me on LinkedIn.
But I tend probably to. Probably Twitter is better, yeah.
Either one's fine. You know, LinkedIn is good. If somebody wants to add me, make sure they tell me, you know, kind of how they heard about me. Otherwise, I'll think they're just some person trying to just add me to their network. So yeah. I'm pretty picky about the people I add.
Mm-hmm.
So if I just get a request and I don't know who they are, I'm going to decline it.
Mm-hmm.
But if, you know, I think it's always good on LinkedIn when people add a little personal note when they try to connect with people. So that would be some advice as well.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And one last question for you. What is a book that you can recommend for our listeners to help them become better at visualization and data science?
Yeah. Well, I think there isn't one book for everybody. So I actually wrote a blog post back in May of 2016 called 12 Books Every Great Data Analyst Should Read.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just go on my blog and you search probably just like books, it'll mm-hmm. probably come up.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, I go through, you know, kind of data visualization books by Stephen Few and Cole Nussbaumer,
mm-hmm.
you know, by the Wall Street Journal. Alberto Cairo, I think, is somebody everybody should read.
Mm-hmm.
The Functional Art in particular mm-hmm. is an absolutely fantastic book. But I also think people should be pretty well-rounded. So read books about kind of how the brain works. So mm-hmm. Brain Rules by John Medina is one I would highly recommend.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a really neat book by the New York Times, or not by the New York Times, by Austin Kleon
mm-hmm.
called Steal Like an Artist. And it's the subtitle is 10 Things Nobody Told You About Being Creative.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's about, kind of reading a broad set of books as well.
Yeah, fantastic. Guys, definitely check this out. There's like even pictures of the books here. So you can just, you know, click on them and get the one that you want. Yeah, and we'll include the link.
And I don't get money for them. So, you know, these are all books I've read.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, once again, thank you so much, Andy, for coming on the show and sharing all these insights. I'm sure you've inspired so many people to at least check out Tableau if they haven't yet, but more importantly, to get stuck into data visualization and start building their own personal brand.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate the invitation.
So there you have it. That was Andy Kriebel, the head coach at the Data School at the Information Lab. And I really hope you enjoyed it. It was a very inspiring podcast. And I personally really enjoyed the way Andy told the story of his career and how he's progressed through different companies and done different things and how he gives back to the community. And personally, my favorite part was the way that Andy, actually two favorite parts, the way that Andy constantly learns, that he doesn't stop learning, and that for him, success in a day is if he's learned something new. And I think we all can learn from that. I think we all can adopt that. That's such a great mentality to have in life. On one hand, you're learning new things, and on the other hand, you always feel fulfilled, feel successful from the days as they're passing by. And at the same time, the other thing that I found very inspiring was the way that Andy gives back to the community. So he's not doing it for revenue, he's not doing it for fame, he's not doing it for anything for himself. He's doing it for the people he's helping, and it brings him joy to see how the people he's been able to help, how they're progressing, how their lives are changing, the transformations that they're going through. And so that's very, very inspiring. And I think we can all also learn from that and be more like Andy in that way. So hope you enjoyed this podcast. Make sure to connect with Andy. The best place to find him is, of course, on Twitter. It's his Twitter handle is at Viz, so V-I-Z, Wiz, W-I-Z-V-I. So check it out, and of course, you can connect with him on LinkedIn. Make sure to follow his blogs, which are vizwiz.com and DataVizDoneRight. And if you're in the UK, maybe check out the Data School at the Information Lab. All of these links will be available on the show notes at www.superdatascience.com/91. And if you did have fun in this episode, make sure to share it with someone you know who's into data visualization or who could benefit from getting into the space of data science. Like Andy said, it's a very, very young industry, very young space, and it's going to grow, and there's going to be lots of opportunities, lots of jobs. So if you know somebody who might benefit from this, who might be inspired by Andy's story, make sure to send them this podcast. You might change their life. And I look forward to seeing you here next time. Until then, happy analyzing.